All right, welcome to the Vertical Shift Podcast, where we engage in candid conversation about real life topics and real issues from a Christian perspective. I'm Justin.
I'm Jeff.
I'm Tommy.
All right, well, let's get started.
All right, guys. So last week we talked about who we are and what we're doing.
Before we start.
Oh, goodness. Here we go.
I just want to let you guys in on a little thing. There's an end of an era. Are y'all sitting down?
Did Taylor Swift's tour end? Or is this a different era?
That's Arias. That's Arias. Okay.
All right. What is it?
So, you know, I've been driving my dad's truck, and y'all know what the tag says on it. Born again.
Born again.
Born again. That's his personalized plate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he wanted to put the truck in my name, and the tag goes with the person, not the truck. So I had to get a new tag.
And?
Born again too.
No, a Memphis Grizzlies tag.
You went from born again to Memphis Grizzlies?
Why? I can't.
That's like going backwards, isn't it?
I don't know. Next season they might. Next have a rebirth.
Yeah. I hear that every year.
All right.
Well, anyway, so today we are going to be diving into Tommy's story. And interesting fact, Tommy spent $49.95 to add Sir to his name, so that he could be Sir Thomas Ulton Duke IV.
Should we say my whole name on the air?
We just did.
Yeah, it's done.
Hey, Engineer Justin, you don't need to cut that out. Probably need to edit that out.
Why?
But hang on.
Where are you going?
I mean, I have good credit.
But hang on. $49.95 to be...
Plus tax.
Right.
To be called Stud.
But we all just refer to him as Tommy. So it's kind of a waste.
I'm going to need for y'all to start referring me as Stud. Referring to me as
not
Stud.
Not happening.
Your lordship? Mm-mm. Lowercase L?
We're just going to start with Tommy. So, Tommy, let's dive into your story, because it's interesting, just like your name.
Yeah. It is interesting. It's quite a story, to be honest with you. So, let me just start off by telling you a little bit about myself. I am Native American, come from the Chippewa tribe. So, what's so funny?
Nothing. I can't ever remember which tribe.
It's Chippewa.
Chippewa.
So, a lot of people say, oh, you Mexican? No, I'm not Mexican. I'm Native American.
Mm. Why didn't you put Chippewa on your tag? Just curious. Anyway, go ahead.
So it's from North Dakota. So the tribe is from North Dakota. My grandmother's full-blooded. She was raised on an Indian reservation. But anyway, I grew up in Memphis my whole life. Like in the legit part of Memphis. You know, now we live out in the suburbs, and you know, my son, he'll say, oh, he'll try to act like he's from the street, you know, or something. Like, oh man, I'm cool. I'm like, bruh, I grew up on the streets of Memphis for real. So. Area called Nutbush, so all my Nutbush friends and fam can say hello, what's up. But grew up in Nutbush in a, you know, not a very nice house. But my story started when I was really young. My dad, you know, my mom is a career school teacher. She retired when she was, you know, she retired after 40 years of teaching. And she was always kind of the solid rock of the family. Both my parents were believers by the time I was born. But my dad had some traumatic experiences in his childhood growing up. And that manifested itself early in his adulthood, in his early adulthood, in the form of a mental illness. And I think it was, you know, and we're talking about the time when mental illness really still didn't, you know, wasn't as well studied and well understood as it is, even as it is today. And I wouldn't classify it as still well understood and well studied, but you know, a lot more so today than it was then. So there was a lot of confusion, learning about mental illness and a lot of things that we had to kind of learn as we go and understand what was going on, because it was pretty... it was a pretty difficult time.
How old were you when you first realized that, you know what, maybe this isn't normal?
Yeah. Young. So it would start with, you know, late night he'll wake up and, or, you know, he didn't sleep a lot and he would be up and he would think, there was one time he thought that the factory, there was a factory down the street, he thought that it was poisoning in the air. And so we had to all get up and he had to drive out in the country with, you know, the air was fresher and things like that. We could start sensing, his mannerisms would change. So here's the thing is my dad never did drugs or alcohol. So mental illness, usually someone will either try to self-medicate with drugs and alcohol, and you see a lot of that out in the streets today and homelessness and things. And the other, another common way is to become like ultra religious, or you know the street preachers and things. I'm not saying all street preachers are have mental illness, but I'm just saying you'll see that kind of behavior manifest in someone who is obsessive compulsive, and in his case schizophrenic, bipolar schizophrenic is what he was diagnosed with, and that's what he went to. So he had a pretty, you know, traumatic childhood growing up and came to know the Lord as a young adult, and then had a really traumatic experience happen right after that when my parents were together. My mom said she noticed then something clicked inside of him. She said that the day she remembers the day she noticed something clicked. He had just had a bad business deal. He was a businessman. They were young family, and he ended up losing all of it. And she came outside, and he was sitting on the porch with the 1,000-yard stare, and just sweating, and just skin looked different color, and just kind of rocking back and forth. And that was the start of it. So from there, in my childhood, it kind of manifested itself more as ultra religious. So he would go, we would go to the grocery store, and he would, get out real loud and tell people about the Lord, and just in this grandioso way. And it was so, for me, it was very embarrassing. It was weird.
Well, I think that's what's important too, in knowing your story is it's not that he was sharing with people, it was the illness that you're talking about that kind of, makes it a little bit, extreme, right? And so that's probably a point of clarification.
That's right.
Right. I mean, poor guy.
Yeah. So there were times where he would say that Satan's in the house, and he'd be not casting out demons out of us, but just out of the house. And just, it was what we've learned since then. It was, this a legitimate imbalance in his brain and the chemicals in his brain that caused him and led him to, think these things. He heard what he heard. He saw what he saw, but, we obviously didn't. So it made it hard for me to understand how to be a Christian when that's all I saw was this ultra, ultra Christian, ultra religious, not normal way to do it. But I did believe in God. I did believe that there was a God. Like I said, my mom was a believer, and she was solid in her belief. And I want to say one thing. My dad was never physically abusive or anything, and that's the one thing that my mom said she would have left if he was physically abusive, and he never was. And she knew that it wasn't him choosing this; that it was an illness that was causing it. So those are the things that my mom, was really the rock through the whole thing. I mean, through my whole life, my mom has been the one that has kept everything together. There was, I'll share a story, Jeff and Justin, about, I may have talked to you guys about this before in the past, but, there was one sort of instance, just kind of give you a glimpse into, the way his way of thinking. It was very knee-jerk. It was very spontaneous.
Impulsive,
yeah. On decision, things that would happen. And he said that he was called to start a church. And he was to start this church out west in, like, Wyoming. And one day he told my brother to get in the car, and we were going to Wyoming to start a church. So I remember I was probably, man, if I had to guess, I was probably 12, maybe. My brother's 3 years younger than me. Maybe I was younger than that. That may be a little old. Maybe I was 10. Anyway, I remember parts of this trip where we didn't have barely any money, maybe enough money, obviously, to get gas. But I remember having to stop at a church, and the church gave us a box of food, like peanut butter and jelly and bread. I remember going through toll booths and not having the money, and my dad trying to barter with the toll booth attendant, like, hey, I got to give you some peanut butter. And the guy was like, look, just go ahead and go through. And we made it all the way to Denver, Colorado. We got to Denver, Colorado, and my dad sold that car and bought a truck so that he could have more money. So he sold the car and bought a cheaper truck, and he had a little bit more money. We got a hotel room. Well, I remember that night, he called my mom. Well, what I didn't know at the time was she didn't know we left. This was like 2 days later.
Wow.
She obviously knew. Well, let me restate that. She obviously knew we left. She didn't know we were leaving.
Right. She didn't know where you were.
She didn't know where we were. And I remember talking to her on the phone in the hotel room, motel, kind of the doors on the outside.
That is different than hotel.
Yeah. I'll clarify that. Motel. Yep. And I never forget, a short time later, the knock at the door and then the crash at the door, the SWAT team coming in.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy, man.
That would be super traumatizing as a kid to experience that.
So let me ask you this. Like, with that, like, how did that, like, all of that kind of influence and shape kind of your view of God and faith?
Yeah, it was hard for me. It was almost like every time I would say something about the Lord or about God or about church, I would worry that I'm getting sick. So we used to call it, oh, Dad's sick. You could see a physical transformation in his body. His eyes would glass over. His skin would change color. You could tell when he was really, the chemicals were in balance. There was a physical change there. Mm-hmm. And so we would call it him being sick. So my thing was, is I don't want to be sick. I don't want to be like that. Mm-hmm. You know, how do I do it different? I didn't know how to be I didn't know. I didn't have a good example or a man to show me how to be a Christian. So I kind of ran from it.
Well, especially like you mentioned, you know, back then there wasn't a lot of the research and all the stuff that there is now. And so, like, sure, Dad's also walking through a lot, trying to figure out everything, you know, and
why am I doing all these things?
Yeah. And, yeah.
Well, a lot of the things for him, because now, you know, maybe a spoiler alert, my parents are still together and my dad has been healed. He has to take medicine every day, but through the medicine, he's healed. Mm-hmm. And we have a different relationship now. So I just want to tell you guys, spoiler alert that the Lord has worked through my mom and through him. And, you know, and I was just sharing a story about the truck and everything. You know, they live a few houses down from me now, and we have a better relationship now than we've ever had. But this is what shaped me from an early beginning is, to your point, Justin, we didn't know a lot about mental illness. And because there wasn't a lot of services offered to him, you know, he believed what he believed. He saw what he saw. So if someone's telling me that you guys aren't standing here in front of me in the studio right now, I'm gonna tell them, no, you're a liar. They are here. He would see things just like I'm seeing you today, and that was the weird thing about it. Mm-hmm. But he had to come to a realization that that wasn't real. That those were that was a symptom of the illness. Mm-hmm. One thing I'll tell you, just I want to finish up this story about Denver, Colorado. The next day, so the police came and took us, and a child services person came and stayed with us. And the very next day, my mom flew into Denver. And, you know, my parents didn't have any money. Well, a local church in Memphis completely paid for everything, paid for her flight, sent a social worker with her to come and get them to fly us home, too. So, you know, through all of this, you know, God's protection and his, you know, blessing was in all of that anyway. And when looking back on it, you can see the pieces put together for his provisions and all, making all that happen.
Yeah, I can only imagine what all your mom encountered with that. And, you know, it is a testament to her faithfulness to her husband and in sickness and in health.
I'll say it's a testament to her faithfulness in God, too, because she would literally, you know, cry and weep. And I remember her praying. And I remember as a young child telling her, "Mom, why don't you leave him?" And she said, "I would if he was abusive, but he does." And she never talked bad about him to us. She never, you know, used his illness against him to us. She was always positive, and she was just like, "Hey, your dad doesn't. He can't help it. He doesn't know what he's doing." So, it, you know, I never had, and I think a lot of that really saved me from having any type of hatred or disdain toward my dad. But I do, there were times though I felt like I missed out on a lot, because in the times where he was really, you know, really battling the illness, I was a young teenager wanting to talk about cars or sports, and he would, you know, quote scripture and say, I think about the things above and not the things here on earth, and that's where my treasure is. And, you know, and a lot of that was like, man, it was disappointing for me. And, you know, I just didn't have, even though I had a father here, I didn't have the type of father experience that some of my friends were having and things like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in those things, Tommy, so kind of looking at that and kind of where you are now, do you see that as a barrier for you coming to the Lord? And kind of share with us that process of going through those things, and then what led you ultimately to be able to trust the Lord and be able to surrender to him.
Well, when I was a young kid, I'd say during this time period, 10 to 12 years old, I made a profession of faith, and I walked down the aisle of a large church and got baptized. But I think it was more because that was what I knew I needed to do. Like I knew that's what I had to do, or I knew that that's the right thing to do. But what you never saw during that time, and even in my early adulthood, was full surrender and change and repentance, where I turned away from those things and put full trust in the Lord. That's where I think the mental illness, well, I'll tell you this, I used that as an excuse for a long time.
Right.
You know, that was my excuse. Like, man, I just don't know how to be a Christian. Every time that I would have a chance to talk about the Lord, or, you know, maybe be, you know, praying even or reading the Bible, all of a sudden this fear would come over me that I'm going to be like my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was weird.
Yeah.
But that had a real hold on me.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Well, I know a lot of times, like, either we repeat the cycle that we're taught or we break it and run from it. Right. And so did you find yourself kind of at that point, a young adult, kind of running from that stigma of type of father to more of a, what the world would consider a manly?
Well, 100%. So I would, with my mouth, profess that I was a Christian. If someone asked me, "Hey, sure, you believe in the Lord?" Yeah, I believe in the Lord. And just because my parents made me go to church, I knew all the Bible study, all the Bible stories, and knew some verses and things like that. But as I got older, I definitely, when I started could make my own decisions, I definitely veered away from that. But then in return, I had to build, you know, I had to fill my life with things to try to find value in things and pleasures and things, because I didn't have this relationship with God that was fulfilling that void. So
what did you get involved in?
I started, you know, those same, man, he's mad at me, ain't he?
I mean, get to it, Tommy. Come on, let's do this thing.
So it was, you know, a lot of this is I'm able to look back on. I just want to make it clear. Like, when you're in the middle of it, you can't see. You're blinded by your own ignorance and stupidity. I'll just put it that way. But looking back on it, I was had the same impulsive tendencies that my dad had in different ways, though.
Right.
It was like material things would make me feel good. You know, I mentioned I grew up in a very, you know, low income area, kind of, you know, broken down house. And I was always embarrassed about the house. My parents didn't really have new cars. You know, I will say that I always had a lot, but when I compared myself to my friends and things, it was like I felt inadequate and things like that. So I would, as I got older, I would go and, you know, buy things, whether it be a nice car or clothes or whatever.
I mean, I can relate to that 100%, kind of similar childhood situation in that. And so material thing, like a gift that actually came from the store and not a yard sale, was amazing to me. Like, it meant a lot to me. So no, I get that. So go ahead.
Yeah. But I still was leaning into my own ways to fulfill my needs. And I'll tell you this, you know, I got married when I was young. I was 23. And, you know, I was not a godly husband. I didn't, you know, it definitely wasn't a priority. And I wasn't a believer. I was a believer. I wasn't, you know, fully surrendered and, you know, in walking with the Lord. But, and so that led me down a lot to make a lot of bad decisions early on in our marriage that, probably, I mean, would have and has caused a lot of marriages to break apart, but I'm thankful it didn't. But I have a lot of regrets during that time period. And ultimately, you know, I had a crisis moment in my life where it was almost like my eyes were opened. Everything was falling apart, so I thought. Everything was falling apart. And in that moment, when I cried out to the Lord, like, Lord, what is going on? It was almost like this light bulb went off. Like, you've never trusted fully and surrendered your life to me. You've always tried to do it your way. And it was in that moment that I said, I gave up. I give up. I have to admit that I'm not fully surrendered to the Lord. I haven't fully surrendered to the Lord. And I need to make that right now. And that was a hard thing to do.
Sure. Because you grew up in the church and, you know, convinced that you were a believer. And
well, more so than that, right? I grew up in the church. And then, as you know, as I was in my marriage, you know, and all the bad things I was doing, we decided to start going to church when we had kids. And we started coming to church, and I was then ordained as a deacon.
Ordained as a deacon, killing it on the drums? I mean,
I was a musician. I played, you know, I grew up playing drums and rock bands and everything. And
on the local scene, too, in Memphis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's pause on that for just a second. Yeah. What was the name of your band?
What was it?
Sheltered Life.
Sheltered Life. Awesome.
Hey, we were cutting edge. We had a website. This was late 90s, early 2000s. There weren't a whole lot of websites.
On MySpace or?
No. Bro, on .com.
.com.
We had a thing, literally, our lead singer would say, go to www.shelter-life.com, not .net, .com.
Wow.
I mean, it was cutting edge. We had a chat board and everything. We had the privilege to play with some pretty, I'd say some pretty famous rock bands, too. I mean,
tell us one. Name one. Drop some
drop
names.
Drop a name.
Saliva.
Never heard of them.
Yeah, right.
Actually, they're local too.
Yeah.
Or one of the guys. Two of the guys are.
Yeah. Yeah,
graduated from Munford, right?
Sure.
Band called Papa Roach.
I have heard of Papa Roach.
Played with Perfect Circle.
Never heard of it.
Oh, yeah.
That's a spinoff Justin. From Tools.
This is Justin's playlist, apparently.
Yeah.
Keep going.
From back in the day.
Evanescence.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah.
12 Stones.
No.
Man.
Another local band called Breaking Point. They had a record out, and one of their songs was a WWE intro song. It's pretty cool.
And I wonder if any of those folks are on a podcast talking about they played with Sheltered Life. Maybe.
Probably not. Hey, we were pretty good, though. We had songs on the radio and stuff. They played us locals on the local radio station. We had interviews.
Well, look, hands down, I will tell you, man, like, you play the mess out of the drums. Oh, thank you.
You're super talented.
Very, very talented.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I wish I could sing, to be honest with you.
Me too.
Yeah. It's rough.
I don't know many drummers that can sing, though. That's why they play the drums.
That's true. Yeah. So.
So drummer in a rock band. What else did you do early?
Oh, my goodness. One of my first jobs. Well, before or after I worked at the Gap. I did. I worked there during high school so I could afford their clothes.
From now on, you have to wear khakis to every time we do this show.
I love their clothes.
You still love a good elastic waistband, don't you?
Oh, well, I need that, but still to this day, I love the Gap. I was a police officer.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow. So super manly. Rock band, cop. Going that route, huh?
Yeah.
How long were you a cop?
3 years.
Okay.
Yeah, and I got out because, you know, had a partner killed in line of duty. I was off that weekend and got a phone call. He was in a car chase and had a wreck and was ejected out of his driver's window. Hmm. And the police car behind him ran him over on the interstate.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, he was a young guy, too. So, I mean, I didn't get out because of that, but that started the events that led to, hey, you know, there's more to life than that. I mean, I loved it, but then again, I didn't get paid a lot, you know.
Yeah.
And I wanted more for my family.
Sure.
So, Tommy, we're gonna wrap this episode up with the idea that we're going to have a continuation here. So this is part one of Tommy's story. We're going to pick it back up in the next episode to finish out his story and kind of hear about the salvation aspect that happened and then where you're at today. So thanks for tuning in, guys. Tune in next time to finish up this story.